On this episode, we discuss Amityville in space.
To be clear, we're still on Earth. It's Amityville that's in space.
Well, technically, we're all in space, Stuart.
What the f***?
And welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey, it's me, Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin. Guys, ask me if I was at IKEA this morning.
Hey, Elliot, were you at IKEA this morning?
How'd you guys know I was at IKEA this morning?
Okay.
Stop watching me. Well, get out of my life.
That's where Audrey is right now.
At the same IKEA in Burbank?
Well, probably not. I mean, who knows? I guess I could text her to ask just to be sure.
Dan, you don't put a tracking device on your wife at all times. How uncharacteristic of you.
Don't start lies about me. Why do you bring up IKEA, Elliot?
Because it may explain why my head hurts and why, while I'm doing the summary of this movie today, it may get a little unorganized. What's the word for when things are not organized?
Well, were you watching the movie while you were in IKEA?
Unfortunately, yes. That's well, they were playing it on all the screens.
Were you washing dishes in their kitchen section IKEA?
I walked into one of their fake kitchens and went to a fugue state and started washing the dishes. Think I was in my kitchen.
Yeah, everything clean. Must get everything clean. Punish, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, look, let's back up.
Well, I'll say this. If you're taking kids to IKEA, they are going to want to open all the refrigerators and freezers. They will never not find it hilarious when there's a sign in the freezer that says, take your favorite meatballs home, advertising that you can buy frozen meatballs at IKEA. When that sign wasn't in the freezer, they were noticeably disappointed. And they'd say, let's check the next one. And they'd open it up and go, take your favorite meatballs home. Like, this is hilarious. So,
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, I can put myself there. I think if I were a kid, I'd feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, you've done a lot of acting exercises, so you can really... you can
sense memory is what we call it.
The sense memory of knowing that meatballs exist.
I was going to set up what this podcast is, though.
Oh, great.
This is
a podcast. So this is a podcast called IKEA Memories, where we talk about things that happened to us at IKEA.
It comes out 4 times a month. Two of those times are episodes like this one, where we talk about a bad movie. We watch a bad movie, we talk about it, or, you know, sometimes it's not bad, but the word on the street is it might be. You know, we hear a lot of rumors. We're kind of like movie investigators.
Yeah, we go down to the shoeshine and we go, you hear about any bad movies there, Curly? And he goes, I don't know. Maybe I've seen a bad movie. And we hand him a 10 and he goes, all right. There's a new bad movie coming out. It's called Amityville in Somewheres, but my memory is fuzzy. And we hand him another 10. He goes, oh, yeah, now I remember space. Amityville in space. Yeah.
Inflation is also hitting Curly.
And he's like, yeah, you know, maybe I could tell you a little bit whether or not people like it or not if you refresh my memory. And then Elliot slams him up against the wall and he's like, how about I don't rearrange your face, Curly? And Curly's like, well, my face is already Curly. That's how I got the name. And I'm like, Curly, how could a face be curly? Is it a beard or is your face just wiggly?
Look at me. Well, when I was born, they didn't have forceps, so they used a spiral cut ham spiral cutting machine and I was left with this curly
face.
Yeah, that's why I wear this big hat with the shadow that goes over my face so you can't quite see the curliness of it.
And all his portraits have to be drawn by Junji Ito, et
cetera. Mm-hmm. I have to commission them specially.
So
I'll never forget when I first read Uzumaki and I said, finally, a story I can relate to.
Yeah, finally I can see myself in comics.
And we're like, just tell us what they said about this on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to need another $5. Listen, your face is going to be Rotten Tomatoes if you don't tell me. He goes, my face is covered in a mask of Rotten Tomatoes. It hides the curliness.
When it's curly and it's covered in tomatoes, is his face spaghetti?
Yeah. And then he goes, you caught me, and he runs away. That was Spaghetti Jones, the bank robber. After him, boys.
Oh, my God.
We could cut Curly out, you know, and just check Rotten Tomatoes ourselves. But, you know, he's a small businessman.
Yeah.
We want to support.
He's also small.
He's a small man with a small, very small business.
Very specific business that really only caters to us. Anyway, I hope that's an all important backstory. But another important piece of our backstory is as the summer comes to an end and the fall months.
So much world building. Keep going. What is this, Rings of Power? Come on.
We get a couple of theme months and we're entering the first of our Flophouse calendar theme months, Small Vember.
There's a little bit of disagreement over whether it's called Small Timber. One third of the Flophouse, Dan, calls it Small Timber. Two thirds, Stuart and me, call it Small Vember. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, this is the beginning of a feud that will eventually tear the galaxy apart as two sides, one calling it Small Timber, one calling it Small Vember, war against each other for eons until really the universe is laid waste. So if any future historians are wondering where did this civilization-defining clash begin, it happened on this podcast.
It was, just to clarify, it was when the other third called it Small Vember, and then we laughed and insisted on calling it Small Vember for the rest of the time.
Anyway, the whole point is, it's the one month a year where we give in to the worst angels of our nature and don't punch up at big Hollywood movies, but find some smaller movies to talk about.
And oh boy, did we find a small movie to talk about this time.
Yeah, well, Hollywood breathes a sigh of relief as we're not coming after them.
There is an interesting bit of backstory with this. Ellie, I know you probably, you know, you've started doing some research too. You may have come across this. Mark Polonia, who directed this movie.
And wrote it.
He started making low-budget horror and sci-fi movies back in sort of the direct-to-video era. And his movie Feeders came out. Blockbuster Video picked it up in close after Independence Day came out. And
what's the movie called?
Feeders.
Feeders. Okay.
So I guess
I thought you were saying Feeders weird.
Yeah. The very fact that it had aliens in it, apparently, and again, this is Wikipedia research, so take it with a grain of salt, but it catapulted it to the top independent rental of that year. And he's had a career of just like, he's a low budget, like he's had like 70 movies.
Oh, he came out in 2022 alone. He came out with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 movies. And I'm sure these are all, I don't think any of these are getting theatrical releases. Yeah. These are all direct to video or VOD, you know.
This is also the fourth movie he made with Amityville.
He made Amityville Island, Amityville Exorcism, Amityville Death House. Well, I want to talk a little bit about that.
Right, what so, you know.
Before we start, anyone listening who's not familiar with the Amityville House, in the 1970s, there was a book called The Amityville Horror about a supposedly true story, it's not true, about some people who moved into a house where murders had taken place and they were haunted by things. And this led to a brief burst of movies that were about the first a movie in 1979 based on the book, and then a sequel to that and another sequel to that. But then also, it's a true story, so nobody can really own it completely. So for years and years, there have been Amityville movies. And then in the past 10 years, there was this sudden explosion again in new Amityville movies, all made by different companies with different angles on them. And I want to talk about some of the angles after you say.
Okay, I just wonder if some of the new explosion comes because of the Conjuring universe being big and the two hucksters at the center of the Conjuring world, the purported actual ghost investigators, real life, you know, people who just want to make money off of the idea of ghosts at the center of the Conjuring are also, they figure into Amityville lore.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably a big part of it.
I think ever since Paranormal Activity, there's been like a haunted house, low budget haunted house resurgence. But that since 2011, there's been the Amityville Haunting, the Amityville Asylum, Amityville Death House, the Amityville Playhouse, Amityville No Escape, Amityville Vanishing Point, the Amityville Terror, Amityville Prison, the Amityville Murders. These are not the big budget one was Amityville The Awakening, the Amityville Harvest, and Amityville Poltergeist, Witches of Amityville Academy, then Amityville Island, Amityville Vampire, Amityville 1974. But then on IMDb, these are the ones that showed up when I looked up Amityville in Space alongside it. There was also... Hold on. There's also, let's see, Amityville Cop, Amityville Germany. It's coming out next year. Amityville Bigfoot, Amityville Toy Box, Amityville Scarecrow. There's one, Amityville Clown House. There's a movie called Amityville Pooh, Killer Poop 2. Amityville Ghosts was another one. And the one, let's see, there's also Amityville in the Hood, which I don't know how this haunted house in a very specific place ended up in the hood. A comedy called Amityville Karen. There's one called, I mentioned Amityville Bigfoot. And of course, Amityville Vibrator, which is a comedy about a haunted vibrator in a haunted house. So there's a lot of...
Full moon picture.
I mean, I'm sure a full moon is in the picture at some point, but yeah. Amityville has just become shorthand for haunted house. So it's very funny that this one specific house, it's now just shorthand for it. The way that you could say like Loch Ness Monster to mean any kind of sea serpent, no matter where it is.
But you have answered, I guess, a question that I had, and that's because this is based on real life made up shit. It is not copyrighted in the same way that, like,
no, and that's why there can also be a movie called Amityville House of Blues, because because you can't copyright the idea of the blues either. But yeah, that's so Amityville is a real, it's like if they like the movie Casablanca exists. When the Marx Brothers were making the movie A Night in Casablanca, Warner Brothers said, "Don't do that," and the Marx Brothers were like, "Well, it's the name of a city. Like, we can use it. You can't copyright the name of a city, you know." So Amityville Casablanca should be coming out soon. It's about a haunted cafe during World War II. In development, according to IMDb, is Amityville Bulldozer, which is just Killdozer, I assume.
Yeah.
This is a slightly roundabout story, so I implore you to cut down on the interruptions. But
did I mention Amityville Leprechaun already?
Oh, God.
I think I did.
I'm just asking for trouble. No, you guys know, I don't think you've been able to... drop by and see them because you're way too busy for such shenanigans. But I do a thing sometimes called Cinema Pandemica where me and my friend John, we like trade off times, and then we also have guest people just to edit like an hour of clips of like on a theme, a bunch of stuff. Like, it's just a thing we started doing during the pandemic to spend the time. And I was putting together a new one, and it was going to be called Shark 2020. Well, it is called Shark 2020. And it's like I looked at all the movies tagged shark on IMDb, and I pared it down to ones that were actually about sharks and were fiction films.
So not
and
like
I added
Swimming
them
with
together.
Sharks, which has no actual sharks in it.
Yeah. But James I made like Woods a one-hour supercut of like shark movies from 2020 that doesn't really follow a normal narrative logic, but I tried to give it at least a sort of an exquisite corpse logic. Uh-huh. And one of the movies I downloaded was this Amityville Island by Mark Pallona, and I had to not use it in the thing because I was like, I scanned through the whole thing like three or four times being like, where's the shark in this? Like, why is this tagged with the keyword shark? And then I'm like, well, I guess it's not. I can't use it, but it was kind of, I wanted to do it because it had some of the same the same actors as Close Encounters of the Shark Kind, also by him. And I'd be like, oh, it'd be so confusing to people being like,
yeah,
the same actors are like totally different characters on top of all the other editing I'm doing. Anyway, that was a long walk, but I'm just to say that this Amityville thing is sweeping the nation.
It is.
Crazy, I saw it just the other day.
Yeah, you guys might know that I'm a bit of a horror movie buff, but I have to admit I've never seen an Amityville movie up until this point. There was one with Ryan Reynolds, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like wet and one of the more shirtless most of it, right?
Yeah, sort of the big budget remake.
That was the one where he's a shirtless psycho dad, yeah.
Yeah.
The original with Josh Brolin and I think Margot Kidder.
James Brolin.
Is that right?
James if Brolin. It was Josh Brolin.
James Brolin and Margot Kidder.
He would have been a baby. Yeah, it's about Margot Kidder marrying a baby, and a ghost is like, that's crazy. Don't do that.
That one was a big hit, and it's kind of inexplicable because it is so boring. But I forget which one it was, either two or three, is kind of a bonkers horror movie, which I know that you like.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of bonkers, coming up next year, I think, or maybe later this year, is Amityville Thanksgiving. So there's even more Amityville enjoyment to going on, but today we're talking.
Now, Elliot has bonkers candy on Thanksgiving. That's why that was.
Yeah,
the only
it's a Jewish thing. So guys, let's talk about Amityville in space. That's the one we're here to talk about.
Let's
now,
do it.
You know the background, everybody. Now, Amityville is a haunted house. Murders took place in this house. Now it's full of ghosts and goblins, ghouls and geists. That's poltergeists, not like Willy Geist, the former media person.
And, that's scary in its own way, but
yeah, very much so. So we begin. We're watching through a video camera viewfinder, which makes sense because the movie is entirely shot on video, on digital video. And uh-huh. I will mention right at the top,
just like Michael Mann's movie.
Yeah. At first, I was like, "Did Michael Mann direct this?
Did Michael Mann do this?"
No, the images were actually a little clearer than some of his TV movies. So it's Smallvember. This is maybe the smallest Smallvember movie we've ever. I mean, I guess A Talking Cat is a little smaller than this, but
I'm not sure.
Because, I mean, like, Andy the Talking Hedgehog at least had, like, what was it, Dean Cain in it? Like, this movie, this is one of those movies where they're like, let's go to the ship, the spaceship computer, and it's clearly the editing computer. And everything is taking place inside the same living room or the same conference room, you know, or edit.
Well, it's very small, but it's small in a way that movies never used to be, now that, like, computers have given people the illusion that they can make anything look good, because, like, I feel like this loosely is a Mockbuster in its way, you know, like, it's got its
kind of its
name that plays on a known quantity, and then it tries to do this special effects story, but it does it by just, you know, compositing a picture of, like, a house into space, you know, and then putting up some, like, aluminum foil on the wall to make it spacey.
I was trying to figure out, I guess I could have looked it up on IMDb maybe. I was trying to figure out what the budget of this movie was, and I can't imagine it was more than $2,000 or $3,000, if that. What do you think?
Yeah, and we just contributed to paying back that budget.
Well, that's the thing. Like, this is one of these movies where I don't want to get too ahead of myself. I texted Elliot. I'm like, this movie shouldn't be so boring for how silly it is.
Yeah.
But
I got to say, looking at the poster art, I was kind of excited because you have the house is on, like, a rock that's a skull, and the whole thing kind of looks like a late period Iron Maiden album cover.
Yeah, sure.
I'm like, why not? Yeah, Eddie's a house now.
He's a haunted house.
Amityville Eddie.
His travels through time and space have twisted him into a haunted house, sure.
Yeah, but it's hard to, like, that being said, it's hard to kind of make fun of it as much as I want to, just because it's like, yeah, well, clearly this is this guy's business model. He makes movies that cost almost nothing. He can sell them off, and he's a successful independent artist
that's the thing. Watching it, I was like, I admire that someone got together, that, like, a bunch of people got together and made a movie, regardless of how bad they knew it was going to look, which is a kind of confidence I have never had. There's nothing stopping me from picking up a DV camera, making a movie at home, not worrying if it looks like garbage, and just making it, but except my own fear that someone's going to look at it and say, this looks like garbage. But these people don't care. And clearly, this is their business model, is to make a movie for nothing, get guys who do a bad movie podcast to pay to rent it, and then make the money back that way. And it's a brilliant business model. And
these days, with the explosion of podcasts, you know, I can only assume he's doing great.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I assume it's the same way that you had he made his bones, I guess, in the direct-to-video market, where video stores needed stock to fill their shelves. It's kind of similar, or drive-in theaters, the years before that, needed movies to show. So they'd show low-budget stuff that, like, Amazon Prime and Netflix and others, they need poster thumbnails to just fill their screens with, and nobody's ever going to choose this, but the poster will fill a spot. So
pretend they have a lot of content.
What was that one we watched where the guy morphs into a dog for a while?
A Love on a Leash, was that it?
Yeah. Love on a Leash, yeah.
Oh, but you know what? That was pretty low. I forgot about that one. We did see some stinker small boys. So yeah, this is a small stinker just like those ones. So we're watching. So again, Michael Mann directed it. We're watching through a video camera viewfinder at a house with a ghost in the window. And the ghost in this manifests mainly as, like, two glowy eyes that float around, or two glowy lights that look vaguely like eyes. And there's police tape around, and there's you can tell she's a reporter because she's wearing a zip-up sweatshirt, and she says,
and there's a couple of police you can tell because they're wearing berets.
Yeah, and it's in the greatest tradition of student film, you just have your friends pretending to be police officers, and they look nothing like it. The reporter says, something is going down at the Amityville house that resides, and she says, it's talking about the evil that resides in this house, in our neighborhood, and in our nightmares. And it's right off the bat, I was like, I'm enjoying some of this dialogue. That's when we're introduced to one of the main characters. This is Father Benna, who I, he, It's hard to take him. He's a priest, but it's hard to take him seriously as a priest, partly because he wears kind of like the kind of hat that like a white jazz musician wears. But also he has hair like Larry Fine from the Three Stooges. And so I kept thinking he has this air about him. I'm like a clown with his makeup off. Is that how you guys felt?
This actor first came to my attention, of course, in a little film called Close Encounters of the Shark Kind.
We all remember it. Now, Dan, did you take anything from their other movie? Apparently he's in Sharkula. But I guess Dracula bites a shark.
Yeah. Well, he's...
I mean, Elliot, it could be that a shark bites a Dracula.
That's fair. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good and more likely, to be honest.
But this character so convincingly embodied chattier of two goons that I can't see him as anything else.
Yeah.
Now you say you can't see him as anything else. Of course, he does play Father Benna in another movie, apparently, Amityville Exorcisms. So this is a recurring character. But
Because, I mean, when he shows up, the reporter's like, it's Father Benna. So, like, he's clearly, everybody knows him. Yeah. You also probably don't take him serious, Elliot, because his priest's collar seems to be falling out the whole time.
Always. And later when he throws holy water around, he has a little bottle with holy water printed on it. But Dan, some of the other roles that, and I don't like to make fun of people in low budget things completely, but just, so this actor, he's played a lot of parts. He also played Father Benna in a movie called Noah's Shark. So Dan, I hope you also
now that is a movie name.
Noah's Shark.
That's a title to spark the imagination.
Yeah, because what a bonanza for a shark. Noah's Ark is. There's two of every animal on there. He was also in a movie called Jurassic Shark 2, Aquapocalypse. But he was in the movie. He's in a lot of these movies that are the same director made. There's Dune World, which is I don't know what it's a ripoff of, and the Empire of the Apes movies. He also played a character named Yamoto in a movie called Zillafoot, which makes me worries that he played a Japanese character, which would not be okay. Anyway,
who was born in Japan and was given a Japanese.
That's possible. He also plays Captain Bermuda in the movie Land Shark and Klaus in the movie Sharkenstein. So Dan, there's a lot of shark movies for you to look at. But anyway,
at this point, we can agree he's probably an amateur ichthyologist.
But he's not. He's also kind of an amateur priest. He's not very good at it. He mainly just remains calm. And
he set a house into space.
Well, he didn't do it. We'll see what happens. Okay. He says this is the final confrontation. He tells the reporter and the cops to leave, and he walks into the house. And suddenly, there's spooky lights and growling laughter immediately. And there's kind of this glowing cloud of flame.
Describe the house, Elliot.
The house looks like a house. Just looks like a
standard. You just walked into a random person's house.
Kind of a standard.
At one point, they go into a bedroom, and you can see you can see like a nice selection of Blu-rays and Xbox games.
Yes,
lining on the shelves.
That does happen later. Most of the movie takes place in the living room, so it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny later when one of the astronauts shows up. Oh no, a cyborg shows up in the living room, and then just looks over and sees that there's a demon, some sort of demon ninja, just standing on the stairs looking at him.
It's amazing.
This glowing cloud. He taunts him. He says, "Christ is powerless. Christ is very powerful, but this father is this priest is weak." And he splashes holy water around from a surprisingly tiny bottle that just says "holy water" on it with a cross written.
Looks
on
like
it.
A little hand sanitizer bottle.
There's a real battle of wills, which comes to a head, or should I say a hand, when the demon uses telekinesis to twist Benna's surprisingly mannequin-y hand right off of his arm, and it falls to the ground, clearly a mannequin's hand, not even attempting to make it look otherwise. Benna wins, though, somehow, and he says he's going to sacrifice his life, and he calls on God to remove this house from the earth, causing the house to lift up into space and in a sort of Gilliam-esque animation. Not exactly realistic.
A transition like that would be fitting for one of my PowerPoints.
Yeah, there's a cut rate element to the whole movie. And the house disappears, taking the priest with it. Then we get the titles, Amityville in Space, and those run for a while over space.
A charitably long credit sequence.
Yeah.
Yes, for a movie that's an hour and 15 minutes long, a fair amount of it is opening credits. Suddenly, we don't have time for opening credits. We're in space. It's the year 3015. That's right. Not quite 100 years from now, but pretty close. There's a readout on screen that says it's 3015. This is the deep space cruiser Wyoming 227 that's floating by. A space cruiser that I like is named in honor of both the state Wyoming and the hit sitcom 227. Starring Jack A.
What if a movie like this just had, like, you know, it'd be like the future, 3015, all disease has been eradicated, but one government rules the universe. pants are optional. Like, what if it just ended with, like, yeah, like let's strap you into this part of world building?
I mean, it asks a lot of questions, and I hope the movie answers them. But
that's the future liberals want. And yeah, by liberals, I mean me.
Yeah. And I guess Winnie the Pooh and Donald Duck.
My style icons.
Yeah, and Porky Pig. Porky Pig is the leader, and he goes, well, we discovered, I won't do any more stuttering, it's offensive. We discovered that we could remove people's freedoms to speech, religion, protest, and community, and other things, as long as we gave them the freedom not to wear pants.
It was the discomfort of those pants that was doing all
And then
of it.
We pan down to hell, and Hitler is like, ach, if only I realized pants was a key.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Back to
this movie. Space. And back to this movie, which has put even less world building into it than we just put into ours.
Yeah.
So the mission is that the spaceship is on is to destroy rogue black holes in space. This creates the idea
of a
rogue black hole, which is a funny idea because black holes are naturally occurring things. They don't have. It's not like they're.
They don't have motivations.
Or they're good ones, you know. And they destroy them by throwing nukes into them, which shouldn't work. A black hole's gravity is so dense, I assume it would just suck the nuke and the radiation right into it. But again, this is a movie about a haunted house that flies into space, so we can't really be that upset about them not getting the physics of black holes exactly right.
We will see, later on in the movie, we'll see animations of those nuclear rockets being launched from the launch bay. And the animation does look a lot like one of those animations when you get a strike at a bowling alley.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And what is a bowling alley but throwing something into a black hole?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a black hole full of pins, but still. So the crew, they all get their names on screen. Let's meet our robot roll call here. There's the leader, Captain Halstead. There's the medical officer, Dr. Nermi. She's the only woman on board. There's Jacowitz, the weapons specialist, who appears to be managing things from the editing bay for the movie. And he has sunglasses on, which is how you know he's a cool dude, I guess. And that's the extent of the character personality building for Jacowitz. There's Maitland. He's the navigator. He has a beard. And as we'll learn, he likes to complain a lot. So he's kind of the Dan McCoy of the group.
And he's basically always seated.
Yes, and he's always sitting down. Again, kind of the Dan McCoy of the group. And then and then there's Vox, the cyborg analyst, which is—
Can you explain the look of this cyborg?
I would love
to. That's what you're going to get into.
So we got to talk about Vox. So imagine you were wearing a child's Halloween costume that's meant for a hazmat suit, but it's silver. And he just kind of moves herky-jerky like a robot and talks like this and is very logical. And I'm wondering what part of him is a cyborg? Because
it's clearly just a man wearing, you know, some Mylar or whatever.
Now, so—
No, Dan, that was your Lar? I thought it was Mylar.
Sorry.
Now, the question is, do you think the character is supposed to actually be an android, or do you think the character is actually supposed to be a guy pretending to be an android?
Oh, yeah. And everyone on the ship is just sort of indulging it because that's how they get the best
work. I would
work.
Love that. I mean, Roger Ebert said, you know, rest in peace, said that you can't bring in things from outside of what you're shown on screen, really. It's not fair. But I like that reading of it, that in the future there's a subset of people who just pretend that they're robots and everyone has to deal with it. And one of our conservative listeners now is like, well, that's where we're heading. Kids are going to decide they're robots and we're going to have to allow it. And I'm like, come on. That stuff doesn't exist.
And stop listening to our podcast.
I mean, keep sending us money, but don't listen. Nermi, she's in the middle of giving Halstead a checkup. He kind of hits on her, but it's as the movie unfolded, I was like, oh, he's just kind of being the way that like a friend would like make a joke about a friend. I was worried there's going to be some scene where they have either a romance or harassment, but it's just, but she denies him anyway. He is tired of this mission and she has a son back home who's waiting for her. And he's like, how old is he now? And she goes, 3. And it's like, thanks to the theory of relativity, that kid is probably like 50 years old now. So, sorry, Dr. Nermi.
Yeah.
if the deleted scene from Aliens taught me anything, it's your kid is a dead old person by now. So Jacowitz, he programs a black hole destroying missile, which, as Stuart said, is a CGI, very, very flat graphic.
It's great.
And Maitland, he's getting annoyed at Vox's logical thinking. Oh, why do you have to be so damn logical? And Maitland appears to work at a local news desk that has had foil put behind it. And I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
this is... this is one of the more inexplicable choices because there are like a couple of shots in this where I'm like, okay, someone who kind of knew what they were doing, like worked on this. There's like, you know, it looks
cheap.
Wow,
high praise.
No, I mean, it looks cheap, but you're like, you've got these CGI built environments of a spaceship. And then you have you know, a wall that just has like billowing metallic fabric on it, shooting lights back into the camera, like all these hot spots.
And so it's similar to when they go to the he goes to the futuristic comm device, and it's clearly a desktop with an Apple logo right on the front of it.
Yeah, well, I actually want to get to that, but like with this scene, I'm just like, does the same director look at this and be like, yeah, okay, sure, this is a like.
It seems like this director's pumping at about a movie a month, so I don't think he's spending that much time on it.
I know, but some of it has effort. But the thing I thought about when the Apple computer came up, I'm like, yeah, like in a better movie, like this could be like a sort of an Alphaville thing where not everything is modern, like. I kind of wonder.
Or even a satirical thing where, like, they work for Apple. Apple's the world government now, and, like, Apple has sent them out to blow up black holes or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you could work with it. But it is, I mean, it is a movie in which not everything is futuristic because almost nothing they have is futuristic.
But I like that this guy's sitting down to what is clearly just a computer on a desk because I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't that still exist in the future? Why in the future does everything have to be built into a console or the wall so you have to, like, what happens if that wall needs to get ripped up or what, you know, like,
that's a good point. But also when they walk into a house, as we'll get to, they act as if they have no idea what it is because it's so far in the future, which I think was very funny. But anyway, so Halstead is reporting to Madame Tice, who seems to be at some sort of galactic president, but also she keeps hitting on him and she invites him to get drinks when they come back for a rest break. But
it's kind of a wild interaction.
Yeah. It starts out business and very quickly becomes pleasure.
Well, also she talks in such a, like a clearly like I'm making a double entendre like sort of voice where it's like, I've always found you to be very accommodating. It sent me into like this thought spiral where I'm like, do I know anyone who has ever like talked to me in that tone, like, but
in
it's not an entendre unless you give it that tone, because otherwise it just sounds like, I don't know.
I mean,
it's interesting acting.
She may have just been like, I thought maybe we could get together for some sex, quotes. Like, wait, so hold on, is that a not even entendre? Like, is that a zero entendre?
Yeah.
If you're going to be that obvious, why don't you just say, like, hey, I can't wait till you come back to Earth so we can fuck.
Yeah. Well, this is because this movie is PG, I think, probably technically. Yeah. So they encounter, oh no, there's some swearing in it. They encounter the, so it is R, hard R. They encounter the largest black hole on record and they're about to shoot it with a missile when Vox says to stop because there's an item floating through space and they're baffled as to what it is. It seems to be made out of wood with some metal and there's organic material. It's a house. They've never seen a house. This is less than 100 years in the future. And
very strange.
Never seen, oh, no, sorry. No, this is less than, wait a minute. This is less than 1,000 years in the future. I did my math so wrong earlier. This is less than 1,000 years in the future. I meant to say earlier. And they don't know what a house is. And it's like, if you went back to the year 1022 and you walked up to, you were in a village and you saw a house, you wouldn't be like, what is this? This thing? You'd be like, oh, it's an old house.
Is this some kind of mud-based domicile?
Yeah. I'm looking inside. I'm seeing some sort of bed-like thing. It's straw in some kind of primitive sleeping horizontal. But I meant to, earlier when I said 100 years, I meant to say 1,000 years. It's less than 1,000 years in the future, but they keep saying, later they're like, your religion disappeared eons ago. And it's like, eons ago? That doesn't make any sense. But anyway, there's a house floating. They don't know what it is. It gives Dr. Nurmi a scared feeling, and Vox detects a life form inside. And then they experience a shockwave, which creates a goat head pentagram floating in space between them and the house. And
now, Elliot Stewart, as metalheads, did you both just leap out of your seat and just sort of psychically astral project so you could high five each other?
That's what happened. I immediately played.
Have you been secretly looking at our text thread?
Our collective text thread?
No, the Stewart and Elliot secret text thread.
God. Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe you would do that to me.
I mean, Dan, you and I have a separate text thread from our Flophouse text thread.
But don't tell Stewart.
What? But you said I was special.
You are special, just not that special. Anyway, I'm moving along. I said that came
out
wrong.
You're not making eye contact with me, Elliot. That's a clear sign that you're lying.
But Dan, you're right. I immediately stopped, listened to all three albums from Green Lung, the English pre-Christian metal band, and then went back to this one. And they're all like, it seems evil. And then maybe the captain is like, could be a coincidence. as if this is some just cosmic thing that happens.
Yeah, it's just a normal thing that happens. So, and we get a lot of shots where we will get to see, we see the spaceship, we see the black hole. we see the pentagram, and then we see the house. And it looks really cool, and it would be a great desktop or background or a screensaver.
Yeah, it's got a real Adult Swim type quality, a lot of this. Maitland is like, send Vox to investigate. Now, we don't care if anything happens to him. He's just a cyborg. And that's when Dr. Nurmi, we get to see the kind of like the ship CGI hallways with someone actually walking through them. And it doesn't work that great. It's just someone in front of a green screen with this CGI. And I imagine, Dan, the reason it looks so much better is they probably bought these pre-made from somewhere. Like these are, imagine this is stock spaceship hallway graphics.
That's a good point.
And that's where the majority of the $700 budget went to probably. And she senses a presence right before something falls and narrowly misses her. And the way this is framed, I could not tell what it was. It seemed to be a support beam, but I don't know why you would have one of those in a spaceship hallway. It might have been a pool noodle. What was it that fell and almost hit her?
It might be the sloppiest cat scare I've seen in a horror movie.
Yeah, well, it was like a mop, right? It was like a mop handle, literally.
I knew it was a long, straight line of some kind.
Yeah, it was basically just like the rake gag from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she goes into her office and she's attacked by, she describes them as tentacles, but they look like pool noodles that are coming out of the camera.
Yeah.
So it's like our monster's eye view of these pool noodles just hitting her and then they disappear and she's like, what? Uh-huh. And so Vox.
And I don't know about you guys, but at this point I'm like, I think we're in for a good movie.
Yeah. This movie has checked off all the boxes of quality. So Vox beams over to the house and Nurmi is
now, like, Elliot, let's clarify. So this spaceship has a transporter technology.
Yes.
Which involves somebody walking into like a little closet. And you can clearly see on the back of the closet, it says revolving darkroom door.
Yes. Yeah.
Printed on the wall. Similar to the previously mentioned Apple logo on the Apple computer.
Yeah, they didn't. They were very. Maybe there's something kind of Penn and Teller-ish about how open they are with the everyday props they were using for this.
I mean, clearly they were relying on the performance to sell the illusion.
This was the first.
It's like
Dogma 95 sci-fi movie.
Well, much like Frederick March and Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck had to mime using an ignition key in a car in a Double Indemnity because the fake car they were in did not have a real dash. So they had to mime turning the key, the engine not starting, being nervous, turning it again, the engine starting. Just as they had to do that, these people have had to fall on all their object work and their acting training to mime being in a transmitter that is not just a revolving darkroom door.
Yeah.
No, I saw that sign, the revolving darkroom door sign, and I immediately thought of like the moment in Ed Wood where Tor Johnson walks into the doorway, and I was like, in real life, you deal with that problem every day because of his size.
And there is a moment later on with a disembodied hand that is just like the scene with Bela Lugosi having to wrap tentacles around himself and then pretend that he's fighting an octopus. Nurmi is like, I was attacked by a tentacle monster and then it disappeared. And Halstead goes, sounds like you got a case of nerves. Vox, he transmits into the house. We get his POV of just wandering around a house, very House of the Devil. And he IDs it as a primitive living quarters with oxygen. And Jacobowitz is like, I don't believe it. Everyone is always rude to Vox. They're so anti-cyborg. Yeah. It's really offensive. And he wanders around for a while, and there's a hooded demon man on the stairs. And
who's like standing like he had just come down to like meet his date.
he was upstairs in his man cave and decided, I will have some ice cream, and walked halfway downstairs for realizing there was a cyborg in the living room.
Dan, can you describe this demon creature?
Well, you only see... I mean, don't you see like half his face? Because like the top half has a little fringe.
Like ninja mask. Hood. Yeah.
A little modesty veil.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of like a dark, like a gray or purpley kind of thing. He looks kind of pruney faced.
Yeah.
Like your standard sort of demon, you know.
Spirit Halloween demon mask.
Yeah. Off the rack mask.
Yeah.
With wearing a lot of black, he does have bare human hands, and when he moves his head in different directions, you can see he also has bare human skin in his neck joints.
And as the movie goes on, I mean, you can obviously his lines were dubbed in afterwards. There's no moving mouth in the mask.
What?
But as the movie goes on, he gets more and more overly effusive with his head movements when he's supposed to be talking. To the point where it looks like his head, he's just jerking his head around at times to represent speech. So Vox sees this demon, but his visual feed back to the spaceship is not showing it. And the demon calls himself Legion. And
and Vox says, does not compute, which is hilarious.
I wish Legion.
It's like, what? You're supposed to know all the names in the universe? Come on, Vox.
It's not
in
Tobin's spirit guide. I don't know. I wish that Legion had said, well, Vox is a pretty messed up name, too. But and Legion grabs Vox's face and the feed goes down. Oh, no. And Jacobitz goes, let's just blow up the house. Who cares about Vox? And Halsted is like, no, we should rescue him. And
actually, yeah, we should actually a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should rescue. He's got, you know, great infographics, can sort of explain difficult things in the news to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just met Vox, the website.
Other things that Vox does.
Yeah, yeah. They're very good at explaining ends of movies that needed no explaining.
Clarity.
Do they recognize the union, by the way?
I would say Vox tends to actually stick itself to the ones that actually need explaining. Other
I don't
sites
know about that.
Have no problem being like... Anyway.
Yeah, before we praise them too much, do they recognize their union or no?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
No, I don't know anything about the workings of them. I don't want to make any claims for them as a work site. They do explain the news well, but they should pay people to write.
Yeah. So
we here at the Flophouse agree.
we stand up for labor organization and fair wages. In fact, more than fair wages. Forget fair wages. Yeah. Generous wages.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Extravagant wages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ludicrously extravagant wages and healthcare. So Halsted and Nermi, they take plastic guns and they beam over. These plastic guns are so funny. They're just toy plastic lasers. And when almost throughout the movie, whenever you have them firing, they're very noticeably pointing them off frame. So you just hear the sound effect. And later on, they have to check their weapons before they all go into the haunted house. And Maitland is checking the weapons and he just kind of shakes them or like squeezes them a little bit because there's no way to check them. They have no moving parts.
I mean, also... You know, the one I remember most was like just sort of flat red. They did no additional painting to sort of give it.
I would have loved like a Bad Boys or like a Hot Fuzz style gear up montage with these crappy weapons.
there's no indication. Like none of the actors are making any effort to indicate weight. Like they're clearly
not at all
plastic weight weapons.
Yeah.
I wish they were just sticking them in their side pockets of their pants. So the two of them beam onto the ship. They transmit over, and they just kind of spend their time again, more House of the Devil stuff, just walking around. They try out recliners. They laugh at an
They're
old
like,
TV.
This seems to be like some kind of primitive nutrition center.
Yeah, when they go to the kitchen.
That was the part that made me, when they laugh at the TV, they're like, look at that monitor. And they're like, and I'm like, you were just using like just a normal iMac Pro earlier.
They have in a bunch of the scenes, they have tube monitors. They have old TVs that are hugely deep because they have vacuum tubes in them. Like, it's crazy.
Look exactly the same.
Or whatever kind of tube it is in an old TV. But yeah, a flat screen TV, you'd think they'd be like, cool, look at this. And Normie is briefly spooked by a hand scuttling along the floor, and Halsted rolls his eyes at her. Ugh. Medical officers, always seeing things.
Yeah.
And they find Vox depowered on the floor. Halsted goes, looks like something tore him to pieces, which is not the case at all. He's in
not
one
true
big
at all,
piece.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. it's a ridiculous
that's
thing
That's when
to
you kind of have to go off script to kind of deal with your actual environs, right?
Yeah, I guess that's
I'm
true.
Not an actor, you know.
he decided to radio play it a little bit just to give the audience more of a excitement. And then Legion's glowing eyes appear before Nermi, and she walks upstairs in a trance and points to a closet door while the zombie hand is creeping around. Halsted opens the door, and it's a closet, and inside is Father Benna in what appears to be like a coma or something, and Nermi comes out of her trance anxious. She doesn't remember it, and they transfer back, taking Father Benna with them. Maybe this retired clown can tell them what's going on in this haunted house. And here's where I want to stop and say one thing.
Yeah.
Watching this movie— I was like, when we picked Amityville in Space, I was like, this is a dumb idea for a movie. And then watching it, the more and more I was like, this is a good idea for a movie. Like, it's a really cool idea to don't have the opening, but have a spaceship find a haunted house, like a real house floating in space, and they got to put on their spacesuits and wander around this house. Maybe the house is much bigger on the inside than it appears on the outside. It's spooky, you know? And there's ghosts and things. Yeah. I loved the idea of spacemen having to explore a really scary haunted house. But this movie has no budget, and it doesn't have any ideas of what to do with this. So I felt like, they took this amazing idea and just wasted it, you know?
The movie you're describing, Elliot, is not far from Event Horizon.
I know.
Which is a really good movie.
It is really good. And I wish that Event Horizon could have gone further and been, instead of a haunted spaceship that takes the place of a house, like a real, I think there's something really eerie about, like, you go to, like, finding a house in space and wandering through it, and, like, for some reason it has gravity. Like, the laws of reality don't affect this house. It's really cool, but it's not what they do in this movie. But anyway, it was a good idea.
The version that I want is they find a haunted funhouse in space.
Oh, and so it's save it for the sequel.
It's a bunch of astronauts walking around, and then like just like a spring-loaded skeleton pops out. Of
I mean, that's, so that sounds really like haunted. A very good sequel then, no, to Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Like some air bursts into their face. Man, I did the Spookorama at the Coney Island recently. There's a part that we went by that was just like, it was like when you go to the eye doctor to get your eyes tested and they burst a bunch of air into your eyes, and that was all it was. I'm like, I guess the scary thing is I don't know what diseases just came into my body.
You said
right
I know
now.
The Spookorama was in 4D. Whoa. So they find Benna, they take him back, and Nurmi examines and goes, oh, Benna's not dead. He's in some sort of suspended animation. And it's a surprisingly casual conversation considering they found an ancient house with a person in it and brought him back, and he's still alive. They're just kind of very casual about it, and then Benna opens his eyes.
And he's clearly missing a hand.
Yes. The space pentagram starts glowing, and Benna starts choking Nurmi, which you think he wouldn't be able to do that well because he's just got the one hand. And then he snaps out of it and yells, no, no, and runs away. Red alert, uh-oh. Quick cut montage of stuff as Benna wanders through the green screen corridors. There's a red alert siren. He runs to the weapons room and starts typing on a keyboard, and then Halsted Maitland hit him with a stun ray. And they're like, how did he know the launch sequence? And we never learned that. How we learned the long sequence. Then we get a demon's eye view of wandering around the house for a while, and Legion is just kind of talking to himself about how there's so many places to rule on high in this new future. Uh-huh. And the crew goes into what appears to be either a utility room or a conference room, and they interrogate Benna, and he goes, I'm from Earth. And they go, Earth? Oh, yeah, that was that planet that was destroyed by an exploding sun centuries ago. And he's like, oh, yeah, I believe in God. And they're like, huh, that's an ancient thing. Nobody remembers that anymore. It's things have changed so much in the less than 1,000 years.
And it's pretty impressive that he has such a good grasp of Galactic Common as well, right?
Universal Basic in English still remains the same language.
That's true. There's been no language drift over the centuries and millennia.
Yeah, or ethnic drift. You could still have an all-white crew of this intergalactic ship. We never see a non-white person in the entire movie, I think. Benna handles all this, and he handles this information pretty easily. It's not that big a shock to him to learn that he's in the future and the Earth is gone.
He didn't have a lot going on back in time, it seemed.
And he's like,
I mean, he's still coping with the loss of a hand.
That's
true. Everything palls before that.
Well, I mean, it seems like a small sacrifice to him.
In the face of Satan. Yeah. I mean, to defeat Satan, I'd lose a hand too. That's a pretty fair, because you'd be famous for one thing. You get a cool robot hand, like in I Know Who Killed Me.
True. Yep.
I will say, maybe it's the enormity of the thing. There's that scene in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where Arthur Dent can't quite comprehend the idea of no more Earth, and so he has to think about how there's no more McDonald's hamburgers, and that's something that he can kind of feel something about because it's small enough for him to comprehend. And I think about that all the time, how there's going to come a point when either I die and Popeyes is still around, or Popeyes ends before I die, and I don't know which one I'd be sadder about. If I die and I know there's still Popeyes chicken out there that I'm not going to get to eat, or if Popeyes runs its course before I do and I have to live a life without that amazing, delicious chicken, because I love that chicken from Popeyes. Guys, which do you think would be worse?
Oh, I thought your sadness... What I mean, like, you're gonna die either way, Elliot. So I thought the sadness in the one
I'm not so sure, Dan.
Scenario was just you know, your children and your children's children.
There's a chance
would be denied
that
the chance to know the deliciousness.
I mean,
of
that's. I mean, my children already know it well, but yeah, I want my grandchildren to know it. Certainly,
there is a chance that Elliot will be loudly having a conversation in an inn about how he will never die, and then death and the Lord of Dreams will be walking by. Overhear him and grant his wish, and he'll live forever.
What a
Dan.
Sweet deal. And every 100 years, I know I don't have to make plans on one day because I already have plans.
Also, you know, occasionally it could happen that Elliot, you know, takes the bag that death has and orders death into the bag.
Yeah, that could happen. Okay. And all I really wanted was a set of, all I wanted was a deck of magic cards that never lost, but instead I decided to put death in that bag. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, these are all good possibilities.
These are all things that have happened.
Pick your own. Yeah. Choose your own adventure.
Choose your own death venture. He's like, well, anyway, it's a house, and I there's evil in it, and I fought it, and I lost my hand, and God took us up into the heavens. And Halsted is like, this guy's crazy. And Benna says, this demon won't stop until it destroys the galaxy, which I don't know why he would assume that. It's not what the demon is saying. The demon wants to rule the galaxy. And Nurmi is like, I believe him. And Halsted says, it's all a series of coincidences. And they lock up Benna. They take him out of that room and take him to what looks like the same room and lock him up. But Benna vows to the universe that he's going to finish this. And Nermi's like, are we ever going to get home? And Halsa goes, sure, we will. Benna gets those demon floaty eyes again. And then the eyes go down the ship's corridor to the Apple computer that Halsted uses. And when he calls Madame Tice, the Legion calls Madame Tice and then chokes her through the computer and turns her evil. And you kind of wonder, after that point, why is Legion bothering with anything else on this spaceship?
Yeah, man.
When he's turned...
There's no point.
Transmit over normal radio frequencies
and
they use.
Yeah. He's already converted the Empress of the Galactic Kingdom or something to evil.
At the very least, the head of this corporation.
Yes. Who goes by the title Madam. And Maitland falls asleep at his post. And this is the series. This is a series of scenes in which each of the crew members has a dream where Legion transports them to the house or somewhere and messes with them in some way. So Maitland wakes up in the house, and it's implied, I guess, that Legion is crushing him. You hear like crushing noises, but Maitland's just going ah. And then he wakes up at his desk and goes, "What the fuck?" Which was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then Legion wanders into the weapons room, and he sends Jacowitz into sort of a space void where he encounters an evil vision of Benna, and the zombie hand grabs Jacowitz's head, and he tries to shoot off the zombie hand and shoots himself, and then wakes up and goes, "Huh?" And then Nermi's transported to the house, and she gets a headache, and she's attacked by evil versions of her crewmates, and Vox stabs her, and Nermi goes, "Why?" And Legion goes, "Because I want to." And the delivery is hilarious.
That
last one causes damage, but up until that point, it's just like, okay, I guess they're having bad dreams.
Well, this is still a bad dream, because Legion snaps her neck, and she wakes up crying.
Yeah.
And then
right.
Ben is tossing and turning in his sleep, and Halsted, now he finally appears in the house, and he gets surprised by Legion, and he goes, "What the hell?" And Legion says, "Exactly, hell."
That's great.
He and Halsted, for some reason, can now go on to have a very casual conversation about the nature of evil, and Legion... His personality is never quite clear.
I love it. He goes,
"I am, shall we say, malevolent." And Legion,
we shall say that.
Not to put too fine a point on it, some have described me as pure evil.
Yeah. And it's very weird to have Legion suddenly be like the like chatty kind of charming devil, when before he was just kind of a mean devil.
Don't worry, I'm the baddie.
And they talk about good and evil and Satan's backstory. And Legion goes, "Do you
and
like
the devil's backbone?"
Yeah, the devil's backbone and the devil's staircase, which is part of the West Highland Way. It's
the devil's funny bone.
Mm-hmm. The devil's
toxics. Tower.
Yeah, the devil's anvil, stirrup, and other bone in your ear. Hammer. That's what it is. And Legion goes, "Do you like to play games?" And Halsted says, "No," which is a hilarious response. Yeah. It makes you wonder if in the beginning of Scream, when he says, "Do you like scary movies?" Does she say yes or no? Because if he was like, "Do you like scary movies?" And she goes, "No." And he goes, "Oh, well, then I guess you don't have a frame of reference for what I'm doing right now." This isn't what I expected.
She indicates a general fondness for the genre.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Halsted's eyes start to bleed, and he wakes up seeming slightly perturbed. Halsted is never really affected by much of anything. Anyway, Benna wakes up. He sees Legion on the ship, and Benna seems more annoyed than scared.
Wait a minute. Is this where he wakes up on his cot, and you can clearly see somebody standing in front of him, and he like takes his time, he puts his hat on his head, he sits up in his cot, and then he looks up, and then it cuts to Legion just standing there.
Yeah. And Legion was very politely waiting for him to adjust himself and get ready for the conversation. Legion is like, "God is gone. Evil has won. We're in the void. There is no God here." Which implies, okay, Dan, your dad is a minister, right? So,
He was at one point in his life.
Okay, he was kicked out of the church, right? But he has a basic understanding. So
he was a minister, then he became a theology professor, and now he is retired.
Okay,
I thought you said something about failed exorcisms.
Too many failed exorcisms.
So the idea that in the void of space, there's no people, I guess, so there's no God, really runs up against my understanding of God, which is that the entirety of creation is his, and he's everywhere.
Yes,
even the places where there's no people.
And omnipotent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he means that, like, in the same way that, you know, there's certain parts of my life that I don't think about at all because it would just be sort of a waste of my time.
Oh, I see.
You know, so maybe God's just not paying a lot of attention.
So the vast vast reaches of outer space are kind of like a gym membership God has that he just forgets about.
Yeah.
And it gets auto-billed every month. Okay, I can see that. And it reminds me of the time when I went through a really rough patch. And
I'm sorry.
And I said, God, what's going on? And he said, look behind you in space. And I said, well, there's just one spaceship. And he goes, those were the times when I was piloting the spaceship. And you were in hypersleep. And I was like, God, I don't think the metaphor really
that
works the way you want it to.
God.
What is hypersleep anyway? He's like, you know, it's kind of like a cold hibernation of some kind. Well, wouldn't you want to say cryosleep?
Sleep plus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like sleep plus. You know,
it sounds
sleep,
pretty good, honestly.
But this is even better.
Well, it's like a full night's sleep, but you do it in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, amazing. But it lasts 100 years.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about how evil's over, and Legion says, why don't you join me and serve at my right hand? Wouldn't that be ironic? Which
it's a good move. He almost got him.
Ben is like, it would be ironic. I love the irony of that. And this is when he's really overacting, his head bobbing for the conversation. Anyway, it goes on for a while. They talk about prophecies. Ben realizes he's lost his cross, and he asks God why he's forsaken him. And then evil Madame Tice calls Halsted and berates him. And you can tell she's evil because she enunciates everything she's saying. Captain Halsted, because that's how evil people talk.
And her hair's kind of in her face.
Yeah, and her hair's a little bit messier. Yeah. And she says, tow the house back
not full like Ringu or anything, but you know, it's you know,
it's like,
not,
right, that's right,
it's
behind,
not brushed
goatee for like hair indicator of
yes
evil.
Yes, hair and face goatee, you're evil at that point.
Yeah. And she says, tow the house back to the home planet, the council of elders has spoken. And he goes, well, I disagree with the elders. And she threatens him, and he calls an emergency meeting. And that's when Halsted encounters Legion in the hall, and we hear but don't see
like,
the
hey,
blaster fire.
Up?
Yeah, Legion is just kind of hanging around, and and Halsted points his gun off camera, and then we hear blasters and Legion disappears. Everybody meets up. Halsted's like, I believe Benna now that I know that the Empress is evil and there's a demon on the ship, I've seen him. And Benna goes, we have to destroy the house to stop Legion. He says, quote, it's life force. That's the point of its life force for whatever reason, because the movie's not bothering. It's kind of like in The Rise of Skywalker, where they were like, the Emperor's back somehow.
Yeah.
Like, yada, 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 the Emperor.
And they say they're going to set explosive charges in the house, blow it up, and then nuke the black hole. And Madame Tice calls, but they pretend they can't hear that the call is coming in.
terrible reception.
Oh, we're going through a space tunnel.
That's literally the joke they use. Yeah.
I think they do say terrible reception. They prep their equipment, which means just kind of shaking plastic guns, and Benna prays. They beam into the house. And Benna finds his dropped holy water, and Tice calls and orders Jacowitz to stand down, but he gives away their plans, and she demonizes him. And they plant the charges, and then he blasts.
And the charges are—they're like bombs, right?
Yes, yeah, they're like little.
They
bombs.
look like tiny little, like they look like the little magnetic things that you put your keys in or something.
Yes, which is probably what they are. And Jacowitz blasts Maitland in a trance, and I was like, oh no, how are they going to beam back? The zombie hand attacks, and then the house shakes, and a kind of how would you describe this monster? I he seemed to be like a coughed up hairball covered in eyes and tentacles.
So okay, so a little backstory. I mean, I would describe this monster as sort of like a monster made out of yarn that's sort of undulating, and it's got a bunch of like googly eyes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a little backstory, Audrey's nephew, Cy, was here last night and part of today. We were babysitting, basically.
You do not tell me you showed him Amityville in Space.
No. Well, here's the thing. Like, we got up early, we went to the park with the understanding that I would leave at a certain point. They would stay out. They'd meet Cy's mom. They'd all go to IKEA, as previously said. You know, and the point was, don't
I feel like
show
I'm
this
watching.
Kid.
I feel like I'm watching Go. It's different stories that are all intersecting out of order. Yeah,
don't want this kid to see any of Amityville in Space, because it is nominally a horror movie. Like, ahead of watching it, I'm like, it's probably not going to be scary, but probably best not for the kid to see it. And then Audrey, at a certain point, was like, it's too hot. We got to come back. We're going to hang out in the other room. I'm like, that's fine. This movie is just boring. It's not scary at all. And then the one part that Cy was around where a monster was there, it was this monster. And I'm like, this monster's just kind of cute.
It looks like something out of Yo Gabba Gabba, yeah.
Yeah, Cyrus looked over and he goes, pretty cute. And so I guess I would say
his hair wasn't bleached white from terror.
This film, this horror, this ostensible horror movie has failed to scare a 6-year-old. So probably it may not have, you know, reached all its core competencies.
Yeah. And it's a good thing we didn't watch it for Shocktober, is what you're saying.
True.
So this monster, he starts out, correct me if I'm wrong, he seemed to start out stop motion, and then he was clearly just a model they were waving in front of the camera, right?
Yeah.
And
that's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, and they run away from it really easily. They escape into a closet, and that's when they learn Jakewitz has been corrupted. And, Benna throws holy water on the monster. That's right. And the captain reveals, I was like, how are they going to beam back? And the captain goes, I do have this pocket, this machine in my pocket that I never mentioned before that has the power to beam us back. And it works just fine. Well. They beat up Jakewitz. They set off the charges and blow up the house. Legion yells, and then Jakewitz creeps out cartoonishly. Scene, they're like, we did it, we blew up the house, and they're all bent over a console, and Jakewitz, he might as well just be on tiptoes with a piano going doo dee
yes
dee, dee. He creeps out so easily.
It looks like he's trying to, it looks like he's a performer who's just trying to like slip off stage without anyone noticing.
Yes, there's a real children's pantomime kind of like, where's Jakewitz? Behind you. What? Behind mm-hmm. here? No, over there. Like that element to it. He's about to start the missiles to launch. I'm not sure why. And Nurmi shoots him, and then they redirect the missile after it's been launched to nuke that pentagram in space, which mm-hmm. means
that pentagram!
Which means also that the black hole is still there. And Benna says, goodbye, I have accomplished my mission, and just wanders off. He's on the same spaceship as him. Like, I don't know where he's going or what he's doing. It's such a funny exit.
It's a little bunk time.
Like, they're just going to bump into him in the crew lounge.
Sometimes you just need your own space. You need to have this feeling of control where you can control your physical environment.
That's fair.
I get it.
And I have to imagine, like, he's been waiting 1,000 years almost to defeat Legion, and they finally did it. And I'm sure he's feeling glad, but there's also got to be an emptiness about that. Like, this was his whole life for a long time. And now what does he have? Not, mm-hmm. Everything he knows is gone. He's stuck on the spaceship.
He's missing a hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Although it's the future. I bet they can give him a new one. They have cyborgs. The heroes realize their engines were knocked out, and they're drifting towards the black hole. And Nurmi says they should pray. Then that's when Benna sprinkles holy water around again, and he lures Legion into the transmitter. I forgot Legion is still on the ship. And he starts he basically walks into the transmitter and allows Legion to walk in with him and start strangling him. And then he, Halsted beams them both into space and then blasts them with the ship's lasers. And then we get a quick moment where Benna arrives in heaven and is told he did a good job.
It's amazing. Yeah.
No notes.
And the ship falls into the black hole. Oops, all black holes episode of this. And Tice's fleet arrives to find only the black hole, and Tice laughs evilly, and her eyes grow demon-y. So that's
setting up. And she says, all according to plan.
Which, what was that plan? That seems, that's got to be just for the public.
Greatest enemy, Father Benna's dead in heaven.
Yeah, but I mean, the Legion's gone. That house is destroyed. The pentagram is pentagon.
You got to
assume it's like whenever anything happened under President Trump, and he'd be like, "Yeah, like we meant to have happen. This is exactly what it's supposed to be."
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the end.
I meant to slip on that banana and dive into a pile of shit. Is a dream I had about Trump once. Anyway,
and Amityville in space. It does not leave you with a the end question mark.
No, it could. It seems like an oversight to have not done that.
An exclamation point.
And I'm just learning this now from the IMDb page. Here's the tagline to the movie: "Screams go unheard in space."
Wow,
which is it's a bootleg mockbuster tagline for a different movie.
legally
different enough. Mm-hmm. So this is the part of the podcast where we do final judgments. Yes. Clearly, we were all pretty into it.
This is a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie we kind of liked. I'll just go really fast, which is that, as I said, I texted Elliot, it's a little too boring for how silly it is. Like, I there's a charm to this kind of movie that goes for me beyond mere like irony. Like I don't find a lot of joy just being like, ha ha, that we're dumb. Like that's
you find a little bit of joy doing that.
Maybe sometimes, but in general, I watch a movie like this and I kind of enjoy the genuine sort of joy of low budget filmmaking, where it's like you watch something like Be Kind Rewind, where they're sweeting all these blockbusters and there's get their homemade versions of the special effects.
Yes, the difference with that being that Be Kind Rewind is a medium budget movie where they're pretending to make low budget movies.
Yeah,
sure. But I'm saying, but there is like something charming about this kind of movie a lot of the time. Unfortunately, this version I just felt was a lot of, as Elliot said, walking around halls, people having conversations, and not enough genuine strangeness. I if you're going to watch a Mark Polonia movie, go back to the beginning where like he and his twin brother, who has since sadly passed, did a bunch of stuff at the beginning where I think they were trying a little harder maybe.
Yeah.
Before it became a an idea of like, okay, well, this is our business model. And I saw Feeders 2 and found that a lot more kind of goofy fun.
Yeah.
But this one I found bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like this is pretty close to a good bad movie. It's very silly. But you're right. Like, there's not enough effort involved to be like, I don't know, to get like joy out of it. Like, it feels like it's just kind of cranked out. Like, let's get this done in one take. Let's spend as little money as possible and hopefully we'll get some, make our money back, which would be almost impossible not to.
I think this movie is fairly boring. I think it is short enough that it could be a good bad movie if you're with other people. It's very
74
short.
74 minutes.
Movie. Yes, it's very short. But I think on its own, yeah, it's a bad movie. I was hoping it would be, like Dan was saying, sillier and like, I was hoping for more of a bonkers energy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But instead it feels, for a movie that certainly didn't have to be made. And it felt like a lot, there was a fair amount of kind of going through the motions of what a movie like this is. But if you want to laugh at extremely low budget things, then it's not the worst. But there are better ones out there. For instance, I was just looking while you were talking at the without the sound, I was looking at the trailer for Noah's Shark, and there is a part where someone is being attacked by what appears to be a hand puppet of a shark. So you could try that one, I guess.
Pretty good.
Hey there, I'm Ellen Weatherford.
And I'm Christian Weatherford.
And we've got big feelings about animals that we just gotta share.
On Just the Zoo of Us, your new favorite animal review podcast, we're here to critically evaluate how each animal excels and how it doesn't, rating them out of 10 on their effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics.
Guest experts give you their takes informed by actual, real-life experiences studying and working with very cool animals like sharks, cheetahs, and sea turtles.
It's a field trip to the zoo for your ears.
So if you or your kids have ever wondered if a pigeon can count, why sloths move so slow, or how a spider sees the world, find out with us every Wednesday on Just the Zoo of Us in its natural habitat on MaximumFun.org.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Carrie, is it?
Oh, yes. Hi, I'm Carrie.
I am Psychic Ross, and I will be reading you this evening.
Oh, interesting. Well, okay. I co-host a podcast. It's called Ono, Ross, and Carrie.
Yes, I'm sensing that. The spirits are telling me. It is a show about
poodles. Well, it's about like fringe science and spirituality and claims of the paranormal. And oh, you knew that.
You do research online.
But more importantly, like we do in-person investigations.
In-person investigate as well.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
See?
Me and my friend, this is so weird. My friend Ross, same name as you.
Weird.
He and I just go and try them all out. And actually, we've gone to a number of psychics. And to be honest with you, it's a lot like this. It's called Ono, Ross, and Carrie. They can find it at MaximumFun.org.
I could have told you that.
Hey, if you want to have some of the joy of a movie about a haunted house in space, but you don't want to actually watch a haunted house in space, microdosing, that's maybe an option. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true.
Make your own house a haunted one.
Same vibe. You've probably heard about microdosing. If not, know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. If you don't want to feel maybe like you're impaired, but you want a little relaxation, you want a little silliness, you want a little creative fun. I like these microdose gummies, and they're available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code FLOP to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com, code FLOP. Elliot, do you want to plug anything? Perhaps the graphic novel I just read?
Sure, I'd love to. Dan is referring to Maniac of New York, Volume 2, The Bronx is Burning. That's right, it's the second Maniac of New York comic from Aftershock Comics. I wrote it. Andrea Moody, the great artist, did the art for it, and it's continuing the adventures of all your favorite characters from the first Maniac of New York book. Maniac Harry, of course, the mindless slasher that is plaguing New York, but also Gina Green and Zelda Pettibone, the two women determined to stop him. And I know Dan enjoyed it, right? I mean, he was texting me when he was reading it. He seemed to like it.
I mean, part of that was me, you know, sort of wanting to get credit for being a good friend in the same way that, you know, a petty person such as myself, like, has a hard time, you know, putting a tip into a tip jar without letting the person know that they haven't exactly been tipped, because I'm just so scared about the way other people think of me,
sure,
Elliot.
Sure, yeah, yeah, sure.
And
of
whether
course.
They
yeah.
think that I am doing. But hey, on top of all my personal issues, I thought it was a very, very good comic that I enjoyed. I gulped it down in one sitting. And I think all of you, if you enjoy the Flophouse, if you enjoy this sort of thing, maybe it's something that you would enjoy as well.
Yeah, I think so too. So that's The Maniac of New York, Volume 2, The Bronx is Burning. If you haven't read the first one, Maniac of New York, Volume 1, The Death Train, pick them both up. And perhaps we'll see more of Maniac Harry in the future. But this mm-hmm. is all there is right now, the two books.
Perfect perfect stocking stuffers.
And if you've got kids, yeah, I mean, they are. If you for the horror fan in your life, if it's a wide enough
yeah,
stocking.
I guess if you're not afraid of the trade paperback, maybe bending a little bit. If yeah. you're careful about how you insert it into the stocking.
I mean, you don't know what my stockings look like.
Yeah, yeah. Stuart is known for his wide stockings. And if you have kids, don't show them that comic, but do play them the Who Was podcast, a podcast I co-host with Megan O'Neill, and it's on iHeartRadio, but also available wherever your podcasts are available. And it's a history quiz show podcast for kids, kid contestants, kid listeners, adult historical figures.
No swears, right?
No swearing, no inappropriate humor. It's the opposite of the Flophouse. It is very focused and all ages. So and worthwhile. There's information in it. So
if it's for kids, it's basically just like Minions shit, right?
There's a lot of there's no Minion stuff in it, which my children are very unhappy about because they're obsessed with Minions right now. But that's the Who Was podcast. Get it with podcasts for kids. Stu, what about mm-hmm. you? What have you got to promote?
Oh, hey, I have two bars in Brooklyn. We have Hinterlands Bar and Minnie's Bar. Just come by, say hi. Why not? Also, if you email, if you're like, I want to support Hinterlands Bar and my favorite podcaster in the world, Stuart Wellington, you can just, you can get some Hinterlands Bar merch. We just got our supplies back up to stock. You just need to email hinterlandsbarmerch@gmail.com and that'll start the sales conversation. Mm-hmm.
And if you want to buy merchandise that I get a taste of, you can do that at the Flophouse Podcast or flophousepodcast.com.
Wow.
So which one is it, Dan? Which one is it?
Flophouse Podcast. Great. Without the. So normally this is the point in the podcast where I would say we get letters from listeners and we'd read a few letters, but we passed an important milestone just recently, 15 years of the Flophouse. Last month, it was 15 years on from the first episode's release, Stealth, which Elliot was not on, but he joined very quickly thereafter, episode 8.
So and the 15th anniversary is Crystal, so if anyone wants to send us anything.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Elliot, that's the perfect segue because the little bit I was going to do in replacement of letters was crystal themed.
Oh, okay.
In honor
okay.
of the 15th anniversary. It's going to be a little taste of of a mini right in the middle
of a
maxi.
Oh, so we're playing a game.
We're going to play a very short game.
Loves the most.
A very short game. Is this a quote from Crystal Bernard, female lead of the sitcom Wings,
mm-hmm. okay,
starring Stephen Weber and Tim Daly.
Yep,
about a small regional airline.
Mm-hmm.
And in there also Thomas Hayden Church, mm-hmm.
Tony Shalhoub.
You know,
big names got their start there.
Cast.
Is it a quote from Billy Crystal? Of course, beloved funny man,
Sweater
Princess Bride, the Oscars, etc. And, or is it a quote from Crystal the Monkey, one of the most famous monkeys? You may know Crystal from Community, The Hangover, and Night at the Museum.
I would challenge the idea of Crystal being one of the most famous monkeys. I think probably a widely seen monkey, but known by name.
Yes, not personally famous. One of the biggest monkeys in Hollywood, along with that monkey that's in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the one from Friends, that jerk from Friends.
Yeah, I think the Pirates one is the Friends one.
Oh,
but,
Johnny Depp was on Friends?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Okay, so.
What a piece of trash.
Quotes. Is it Crystal Bernard, a quote from Billy Crystal, or Crystal the Monkey?
All right. Okay.
I knew that I did not want to be a statistic, that I wanted happiness within, and I wanted to be present because I knew what a great mover I was. I could move things and make things happen.
That doesn't sound buzz like a monkey would say.
So we take turns?
This is free form.
I'll buzz in.
Yeah.
Billy Crystal.
That was Crystal Bernard. Bernard.
Egg on Elliot's face.
Okay, here's
what an idiot.
A crystal here's egg. Another, a Swarovski crystal egg on my face. Ow.
Here's another quote.
I got this.
Yeah.
Billy Crystal.
No. No, sorry.
Again. Oh, I can't believe you messed that one up.
Was Crystal the Monkey. Here's one.
You're not even going to let Stu steal?
Consider the rose. The rose is the sweetest smelling flower of all, and it's the most beautiful because it's the most simple, right? But sometimes you got to clip the rose. You got to cut the rose back so something sweeter smelling and stronger and even more beautiful will grow in its place. That's from who? Anyone?
I'm going to buzz in. I believe that is from a commercial for Crystal Light.
No, I'm afraid not. That was Billy Crystal. That was Billy Crystal.
Oh.
Okay. How about this one? We actors have to be conscious of ourselves. There's vanity involved. There's competitiveness. There's something that's not appealing to me about myself that I try to get away from. I'm constantly trying to see that in others. That doesn't feel like home to me. Yeah.
Crystal the Monkey.
That was Crystal Bernard.
Oh.
Crystal Bernard. Okay, here's there's just two more.
What's the score right now, Dan? What's the score?
0-0.
Ooh, tie game.
Anyone's game, yeah.
Here's one. What's so fascinating and frustrating and great about life is that you're constantly starting over all the time, and I love that.
Hmm.
Yeah. Tough one. Okay.
I've got one. Is it Jesus Christal?
That was not... From Jesus. That was not from Jesus Christ's Super Crystal. No.
Wait, what are you trying to say? Jesus Christ Super Crystal, and you said Greasus Jeans?
Yes.
Greasus Jeans.
Well, might I remind you of the words of our Lord, Greasus Jeans, when he said, turn the other beach. Let's remember the words of our Savior when he said that truly the Miji would embarrass the Gerv.
Oh, my God. I've got one final quote. Here it is. Yeah?
Yeah, it was, sure, fuck it. It was Greasus.
I'm going to say Greasus also.
That was... Greasus doing an impersonation of Crystal the Monkey.
Oh, so we both got a point. Great.
Oh, cool. The museum. So we both won.
Everyone's a winner. That's the way we do it.
And that was our gift to you, the listener, to celebrate 15 years of this podcast.
15 years. You've been listening to this garbage for 15 years.
This complete crap.
Examine your lives.
I think our show is really cool, actually, and the people who listen to it are also cool.
No, it's true. We're uncomfortable with our own... selves, so we discount accomplishments. Anyway, let's move on.
I was thinking about this.
Too real.
I was talking to my wife about this, and I was like, it's been 15 years, which means like it's in 5 years, it's conceivable that we'll have 20 years of this show. And at that point, I just don't know how we stop. It just keeps going. Yeah. Like someday we might have 50 years of this show.
That's the problem.
Yep.
Well, I think once we have to, what we're aiming for, let's be clear, is what is it? The Mark Twain Award for American Humor.
Okay, that's our goal.
So we gotta elect a Flophouse president so that they can curry favor the Kennedy Center honors. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay. we want one of those awards. Give us one of those.
Okay.
So we'll just keep going for that one. But
or like an MTV Kids Choice Award or Nickelodeon Kids Choice Award or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. Just dump a bunch of
like an MTV Movie Award for greatest what the moment or whatever.
Yeah. Or best kiss from the MTV Movie Awards. We'll take it.
It's always fucking Spider-Man. It's always Spider-Man hanging upside down every fucking year.
Every year.
And you know what? I get it. It's hot.
Yeah. They're up there, you know, Harry Styles and, I don't know, the Olivia Rodrigo opening the envelope. Mm-hmm. And they're like, ugh, yep. Spider-Man again. Why do we still do this?
Yeah,
why do we do this?
Yeah. See, Spider-Man is
like,
is,
why are we trapped in this, you know, like Sardian hellscape where we are constantly just saying Spider-Man wins the best kiss?
Yeah, that was the original myth of Sisyphus was that he kept having to announce Spider-Man as winner of best kiss.
The myth,
yeah.
of, the myth of spider kiss.
And they go, it's the kiss of the spider kiss, and they go, Spider-Man will accept this award via satellite, and he's in his office. There's just a shelf full of MTV Movie Awards behind him.
It's like, wow,
I can't believe
really?
You didn't say myth of Kiss-a-Face. Or Kiss-a-face.
The myth of Kiss-a-face is that he's just trying to smooch that boulder, but it keeps rolling up the hill away
from
him.
The myth of Kiss-a-face sounds like something that Jerry Lewis made sort of like later in his career.
Yeah, but it's a Jerry Lewis kind of Greek myth type thing.
Yeah.
Nice Athena, that kind of stuff.
Let's recommend movies that we saw. That's what this is. The movie podcast.
Movie podcast. Yes. Talking
movies. Recommend movies that we saw.
We
that
love
we
the
liked.
Flicks here at the old Flophouse.
Yep, Flophouse has the movies. Recommendations.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna recommend a couple things. The first thing is more on behalf of Audrey, who said that I should give honorable mention to a movie that we watched. We went to the wedding of one of Elliot's and my old co-workers at The Daily Show. And Audrey and I did. Elliot was not there.
Not when invited. Are we gonna get to, I was not when, invited.
When are we going to get to the movie?
Confusing.
This no, is a we, lot we went, of backstory for what's just going to be the title of a movie that you're recommending.
Yeah. We went up to Albany for this. We've been traveling during the day. We're out in the sun. Not like a lot of travel, but we, you know. Like,
I say, yeah.
Everything getting out of New York is a hassle.
It's true. Just ask Bill Murray in that one movie.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Quick change.
Yeah.
So we were looking for something.
Not that quick a change. Took a long time to get out of New York.
That's the thing. The title's ironic. That's what makes the movie so good.
Mm-hmm. We were looking
That's
for something.
That's why Father Benna considers it. Yeah.
Very light and, you know, easy on the brain at the end of the day.
Like
and,
pie?
We were going through Netflix. Say easy on the brain, a pie.
Yeah,
we're going
the movie,
Netflix.
Not shoving a pie into your ear.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's like that was a pie easy on the brain.
Yeah, that was when I watched the movie Pie. I'm like, when's he gonna stick a pie in his ear?
Point is, we were scrolling through Netflix. I saw the description for the movie Work It, which had the words dance, competition, and ragtag group, and I knew that those are three of Audrey's keywords when it comes to things that she might enjoy. So I'm like,
keywords.
And point
now,
is,
now you're
you
not
like,
talking about Work at the sitcom that barely existed about two guys who have to dress and drag to keep their jobs.
Yeah, this is not even my main recommendation. I'm just saying,
certainly
that
a lot of backstory for it.
Jesus if you Christ. Like it, well, there's been a lot of roadblocks on the way. If you like that kind of thing, it's a fun example of that kind of thing. It's not much beyond that, but you don't always
want
that.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not
like begging the Academy to
work no, I'm like, the number if you like a fun movie. Dance competition movie, that one might be for you.
Okay.
But the more challenging, much sadder movie I'm recommending is Resurrection, starring Rebecca Hall, about a woman who has... you know, it's a horror movie. There are levels of reality. It's hard to say exactly what happens in the film. Let us just say that someone who was part of an abusive relationship with her re-enters her life, and she has sort of a mental dissolution from that point, which makes it a very painful movie to watch in a lot of ways.
And also a very Rebecca Hall movie. She likes to make movies about women whose minds dissolve. Yeah.
That's what I was going
to
say.
She's the best in the biz when it comes to brittle women.
I fucking love Rebecca Hall, particularly, though, in horror movies about trauma. I loved how good she was in The Night House. Like, she is great at just being someone who is very strong, but also dealing with forces that would shake any strong person. And in this case, the force is Tim Roth, who is equally good on the other side, just like a horrible man who clearly is just a malevolent force. And
talk about it. Did I ever tell you my story about when my brother met him?
No.
My brother met him and then asked him if they could take a picture, and he went, no, and just walked away.
I love it. But this movie, just be forewarned, like I said, it is about someone who is sort of re-experiencing the trauma of past abuse, which might be not for everyone. But it's a horror movie that goes some very strange places. The acting is so good. And I just really had a great time, even while it being almost unbearable at certain points, mm-hmm. too.
I've been watching a lot of horror movies lately, and the one I'm going to pick out of my horror movie bag, I guess it's a horror movie, is Bodies, 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 a kind of a thriller with a bunch of youngins all in a house, and somebody dies, and they're trying to figure it out, and they all suspect each other. Some important points is that Lee Pace is in it, and he is very tall. And let's see, Rachel Sennott, I think. Sennott, I don't know how to pronounce her name. From Shiva Baby, which I recommended previously and was shot in this very neighborhood that we're sitting in right now. Mere blocks from where I'm seated.
We're getting a lot of extraneous world building and all the recommendations today.
Blowing up my spot.
when the Shiva Baby tour comes through, it's gonna. That must be Dan McCoy's apartment.
Yeah. But she gives a really great, almost star-making turn. It's fun. It's light. It's got some jokes. I liked it. Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
I'm going to recommend a movie from 1947. It's called The Gangster, and it's a late noir film. I guess it's a medium-time noir film. And it stars Barry Sullivan as a gangster with the kind of funny name of Shabunka, who and the movie has trouble getting over the fact that the main character's name is Shabunka. But he's a numbers guy. He runs the numbers racket in somewhere in Brooklyn, I think. And he has this view of the world where he trusts no one. He's always thinks everyone's going to betray him. He suspects everything, and he refuses to let himself relax or care really deeply about somebody else or let someone else care about him. And that ends up biting him in the end as a larger organization moves in on him, and he finds that he has nowhere he can turn. And it's got a really great supporting cast. Akeem Tamaroff is in it. There's Elisha Cook Jr. has a small role in it. All these people who are great in old movies. And there's a couple of side plots that are surprisingly funny or tragic. There's a tragic story about a man who owes too much money because he's been gambling and has embezzled some. There's a funny story about the soda jerk at a soda fountain who considers himself just a ladies' man, but can't really seal the deal. But overall, it is a kind of dark movie. And one of the things that's real cool about it is it was super low budget for the time. They did not shoot anything on location in New York, which meant they had to create these kind of very artificial New York street sets and kind of like Coney Island-style boardwalk sets. And so it has this weird kind of like dreamlike quality to it because the street scenes look so artificial in a really in a way that I thought was really cool. So that's The Gangster. It's just it's a nice little strange noir movie.
So hey, we did it.
Yeah, 15 years.
We did it.
Happy birthday to us.
we celebrated that birthday with Amityville in Space and a game about Crystal Bernard.
Just like the Flophouse. Hey, if you like this nonsense, there's a chance you'd like the other nonsense over at MaximumFun.org. Some of it's not even nonsense. Some of it has real information, if that's your flavor.
Amazing.
And also, you know, tweet about us, review us, do what you can to spread the word. It really does help. If you've done it in the past, hey, we're not talking to you. Don't get mad at us for bothering you about it again, okay? It's fine. It's fine. Everyone's okay. Everyone's friends here.
Yeah.
Right?
Calm down.
Yeah. But
Dan, are you okay?
Also, I think so. One other thing. This is edited by Howell Doughty. Alex Smith, Howell Doughty on Twitter. There's a podcast called Howell Doughty's Fast
Track. Yeah, you were just a guest, right?
I was recently just a guest. I forgot to plug it during the plugs, but I'll plug it now that we're talking about how great Alex is as our producer. We wrote a song in half an hour, and then I sang it, and you can hear me trying to find like the notes of a song that I've never heard before because we just invented it. I mean, Alex gave me the notes, but it's just so much harder than singing like a karaoke song that you've heard a million times. I'm like, I think this is the tune. Anyway, if you want to hear me sing a bossa nova about being an adult crybaby, that's where you can do it over at Fast Track. So check that out. But for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
Bye. I don't know. Should we start? Is that how we do it?
Yeah. We always,
yeah, sure. I mean,
if we don't start,
we never finish.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. No.
That's true. That's both true, as true as it is unnecessary to say.
What is a podcast if not saying words, as Jesse says over on?
Yeah. What is a podcast if not saying unnecessary stuff?
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.